Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'd like to take a moment and welcome you to the Healing Hearts at Wounded Knee, Talk Part 1. And today we've got a panel of five speakers, and I'll be your MC in introducing each one. I know that we've handed out to you, you should have some a gift from us as a memento, a postcard, that you can take with us, with you, with some more information and how to find out more later. You should also have a sheet with the bios for all the speakers. And then we're handing around some 3x5 cards that you can take notes on or give us a message later. And then there's a sign-up sheet for some different stuff we've got going on if you're interested in that. And I'm going to introduce our first speaker, Chief Arvel Looking Horse. And it's just really an honor for me to be here today, and just thank you all for coming. Chief Arvel Looking Horse. Arvel is the 19th generation keeper of the white buffalo calf pipe bundle and holds the responsibility of spiritual leader among the Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota people. He holds an honorary doctorate from the University of South Dakota and travels and speaks extensively on peace, environmental, and native rights issues. And he has been the recipient of several awards, including the Wolf Award of Canada for his dedicated work for peace. And a skilled horseman, he shares his knowledge with the youth on the long-distance rides that take place in South Dakota throughout the year. Please welcome Chief Arvel Looking Horse.
Blessings, greetings. We as Oyate, it's the greatest honor to be here on behalf of our nation. The Buffalo Nation are known as the Great Sioux Nation. In our tradition, in our we always start the prayer, so I'd like to start the prayer instead of regardless of this day and beautiful way. Of the ride on horseback to Wounded Knee, every year, and we're still doing this right as of today, December 15th to the 29th, on horseback. Today is mostly all young people, youth, picking young people leaders. That sacred hoop, Changleska Wakhan. And we as the people we have our oral history, and there's a written history which talks about when the knee is a battlefield. But that's the way it was written back in 1890. But we changed it to massacre and when the knee, 1990. And former Governor Mickelson, he helped us do a peace and reconciliation. I remember that we started to write in 1986, but I joined the ride in 1987. They paid me tobacco, and I accepted the tobacco to be on the ride as a spiritual leader. So, 1987, we wrote 4 years. Because our ceremonies are 4 years, and 4 days, and 4 years. And in 1990, when we, was the coldest we ever had, back in 1990, it was after the massacre, a blanket of snow fell, it was so cold. Below zero. While we experienced that temperature, 1990, right, from the time we started in Wasinbu was shot and killed back in 1890. We did our morning prayers, we circled up and we rode horseback, sub-zero temperatures, all the way to win it need. I remember when we were leaving Cherokee, South Dakota, it was very cold and the wind was very strong. We couldn't ride on the ridge, so we had to come to the bottom of the creek and start riding up the creek. And as we were going towards the top, just like my brain was very freezing. It was probably about 50 below. And as I was going towards the top there, the wind was so cold that I had a hard time. I'm sure all the riders were very cold. And at one point, because of the fog, the heavy fog, we couldn't see very far. And at one point, I felt like I was dreaming. And as I turned and looked back at the riders behind me, all the riders are all white because of the horse that they're breathing. The riders and the horse are all white. They were packed. And the sweat of the horse were collecting that. So as we were, for a moment there, I thought I was dreaming. It's like I was floating in the air in the clouds. And I, as soon as I looked forward again, just like that, it hit me again, that horse, the movement of the horse, you know, came back. And as we were going up the hill there, almost to the top, there were people singing. And we stopped. I was listening, and then we took off again. As we got on top of the hill, was the wires from the telephone. There was nobody. But we all of us heard. So those are things that were with us when we rode. And then when we got to the interstate, I-90 interstate, was dark. As we were crossing, all the state, probably 10, 15 state troopers are there waiting for us. And they helped us cross that interstate. And they said, who was that first group that went ahead? I said, no, that was just, we were the only riders here. But 1990, we had over 300 riders. The same amount of people that were massacred happened with it being back in 1890. We never planned all these things. And there's so much, we rely on spirit. There's power of prayer, healing. And since then, I just came back from, Baghdad. 1990, to pray for world peace, global healing. It was a totally different experience. A person like me, being a Lakota, fluent speaker, staying in ceremony, I never thought that I would leave my reservation back, my uncles, my aunties. But today, we're faced with global challenges. As we go into the ceremonies, they always talked about the wars. And they talked about, we had wars to protect our homeland, our people. But we're moving. There's a horizon on the horizon. There's a war that is approaching. This will be the last war. World war. The man has gone too far. Faced with a lot of climate changes, earth changes. So today, I have a prophecy. I am the 19th generation. Keeper of the sacred pipe. That beautiful spirit woman brought the sacred pipe to us 19 generations ago. Every generation. If a life is a lifespan of a bundle keeper, which lived over 100 years. And today I'm the 19th one. The elders told me when I was 12 years old, I became the bundle keeper. never to use foul language, never to use guns, but to walk in peace and harmony. That only the good shall see the pipe, bad should not see their touching. But today, but yes, the story of the elders told me that someday there's going to be the white wolf and calf stand upon the earth. White animals will be born. A time people would go back to their sacred sites, their tradition, their culture. That there's a sign that Mother Earth would be sick. Since the 1990s, we spoke at the United Nations, saying that Mother Earth is sick and has a fever. That all these white animals being born since 1994, that we are the messengers. We're there. We take care of Mother Earth, our ceremonies, our way of life. But today, we are being faced with global challenges in this global community. So we speak from the heart of Mother Earth, Shasapa, the Black Hills of South Dakota. Not too far from there, this Wounded Knee, South Dakota. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief Arnold. I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Saniel Bonner. Saniel is Harvard educated and has helped hundreds achieve unshakable spiritual awareness and the stresses of everyday, amid the stresses of everyday living. His many books include Healing the Spirit, Healing the Spirit, Matter Split, Waking Down, and the novels While Jesus Weeps and Ultimea 1.0. Saniel is the founding originator of the Waking Down and Mutuality Transmission and Teachings, and recently, with his wife and full teaching partner, Linda Groves Bonder, has launched Human Sun Institute and the White Hot Yoga of the Heart. He's also a very amateur golfer and flutist. He and Linda teach around the U.S., and internationally, and are also founding members of Ken Wilber's Integral Institute. Please welcome Saniel Bonder.
Claim the heart of our humanity. Let us also claim the heart of our divinity. Greetings. It's an honor and a great privilege to be here with you today. Let me offer an invocation of the divine in our heart from India's ancient Chandogya Upanishad. There is a light that shines beyond all things on earth, beyond us all, beyond the heaven, beyond the highest, the very highest heavens. This is the light that shines in our heart. Really reclaiming the heart of our humanity may require us to embody that heart light and love through a religious hero's journey, one that includes understanding, integrating, and going beyond being governed by our darkness, our fear, and our hatred. Years ago, I wrote in an essay, Wounded Knee is the most unforgettable shrine to the systematic genocide of the Native American peoples, a process that European settlers and despoilers carried on without rest and with no significant remorse for more than 4 centuries. Until something heals in the American heart that was slashed open at Wounded Knee, my sense is that the democratic spiritual promise of America can never be realized to any substantial degree. People have to be willing to own responsibility for these atrocities. Something must be done. I felt called then to make a pilgrimage to Wounded Knee. 20 years later, this past June, I stood on a knoll, the knee, at that place, with Lakota Sioux grandmother, Jean Fleury, who is the spark and organizing inspiration of our being here this week, and her sister, Stephanie Pratt. Right there on December 29th, 1890, firing early machine guns, U.S. soldiers slaughtered 300 Lakota Sioux men, women, and children as they fled in terror down the hill and through an open field. Many of their bodies froze where they fell. We were there on a bright, breezy, hot day. The place has this air of solemnity, peace. But when we turned toward the cemetery, Jean began shaking. She told us, overwhelmed, that she'd been to Wounded Knee twice before, but couldn't enter the graveyard. In the center of that graveyard is a mass grave with many massacre victims. From her childhood, Jean was told that one of her ancestors, she didn't know who, was among them. So Stephanie held one of Jean's arms and I held the other, and we walked in. Jean began reading an obelisk that marks the mass grave. The top name is Chief Bigfoot Spotted Elk, who was murdered by the army that day, started the massacre. At the bottom, or near the bottom, was Swift Bird. Jean knew that name. Swift Bird was her several times great uncle or grandfather. While Stephanie and I held her, she wept. Jean asked me to talk about trauma and multi-generational trauma in particular. Trauma is any event that causes intense terror, hopelessness, horror, or dread. Post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, is the resulting dysregulation that becomes the body's default condition. People so afflicted can go ballistic or violently implode with almost no provocation. When our post-traumatic buttons get pushed, the amygdala, which registers threats and calls up memory-based feelings, goes haywire. Extreme physical and emotional symptoms of stress, including fight and flight reactions, get triggered. Our brain and hormonal chemistry goes into extreme mode, then resulting, often, in severe systemic overinflammation, which then can lead to chronic diseases, degenerative diseases, and hasten aging. Unrelieved, this super stress re-traumatizes the brain and nervous system continually. Many of us are familiar with these symptoms. Psychological professionals work with the child of survivor syndrome. Severe trauma survivors wreak havoc on their offspring by what they say and do, and or don't say and do, and just simply by the immensity of the shock, terror, and horror that they carry. Art Spiegelman wrote a famous graphic memoir of his father's experience of the Holocaust entitled Mouse. First subtitle was, My Father Bleeds History. Psychoanalysts treating children of survivors say that their suffering shatters boundaries of space and time by the immediate here and nowness that it brings. We're not believers in ghosts, they say, but our patients clutter up our offices with them. A new science, epigenetics, takes understanding of trauma beyond psychology. It studies how our genes expression, not the underlying DNA code, can be affected by environmental factors. In The Science of Suffering, Judith Shulevitz wrote, "Researchers are increasingly painting a picture of a psychopathology so fundamental, so well biological, that the children of survivors may be born more susceptible to PTSD, a vulnerability expressed in their molecules, genes, neurons, and cells." In the 1980s, Maria Yellow Horse's Braveheart, a Lakota social worker, cataloged pervasive human devastation at the Pine Ridge Reservation near a Wounded Knee. She documented cumulative, multi-generational, multilineal historical traumas, soul wounds, unmourned loss, and horrifying dreams of long past atrocities, possible instances of collective memory. Each culture has a legacy of war, adversity, and trauma. Through what science calls the open loop of interpersonal limbic regulation, we all share this kind of inheritance. We share the legacies of greatness, genius, heroism, too. But as neuroscientist Rick Hansen writes in Buddha's Brain, positive memories are like Teflon. They slide right by. Negative memories are like Velcro. None of my ancestors died in the Holocaust. Yet my mother, born here to Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe, was freaked out for years by anything German. She couldn't even get into a Volkswagen. It's not just survivors' children who suffer these effects. Whole peoples do. Numbers from Wikipedia. Estimated deaths in 46 major wars, massacres, and genocides in the last 2,200 years. 387,984,000. Multiple millions more have died in prisons, camps, slavery, from famines, floods, and landslides partially caused by humans, human sacrifice, other deadly events. And that's just those killed. Those numbers don't count. The wounded, those traumatized at that time, or in the next generation, like my mother, or those born later, like Jean. Most studies focus on trauma victims. What about perpetrators? Is there an epigenetics of evil? Let me tell a story. One Saturday in February 1993, several friends and I embarked on a shamanic journey. Our shamanic mentor, not attending, had blessed our plan. That afternoon, I casually read an Esquire article about a Russian serial killer on death row. This is not the best way to prepare for shamanic journeys. In the journey, all by myself, I saw a psychic black cloud enter the room. It was the spirit of that Russian sadist. He then asked me if I would show him what it feels like to be able to feel extreme hatred, violent lust, even murderous rage, and still stay sane. I agreed to try. All went well enough until I took it into my heart. Instantly, I was exploded into an absolute vacuum of utter dark and cold. Like outer space, without even a pinprick of light from a distant star. I knew it was his heart. No wonder he'd gone so horrifyingly mad. Ever since, well, I should say, it took work to get him out of me. My friends thought I was crazy to have let him in. Our shaman praised me for daring to do it. Ever since, I respect evil. I don't believe psychology by itself can heal it, or that hard science will ever create drugs or mechanical treatments that alone can cure it. It is near extinction of the soul. If redemption is possible, it takes a miracle of religious conversion through divine grace. Years later, I learned that Hitler had prided himself on having an ice-cold heart. So with genocidal Hitlers, depraved serial killers, men who randomly massacre children and adults just about anywhere, blood feuds around the globe, national leaders who starve populations and drive them out of their own countries, and actually have dropped nuclear bombs on cities, significantly human-generated climate catastrophes, and everything else Rabbi Saperstein was cataloging for us last night. What will it take to reclaim the heart of our humanity? No small task. Yet the most important thing we can do. Realizing the heart of our divinity, I believe, will be crucial. In the 20th century, a mini miracle occurred, helping us in this direction. Science and spirit at least once fused in the human heart. English anatomists in 1906 discovered where the heartbeat originates in mammals. In scientific language, cardiac muscle possesses an intrinsic rhythmicity that allows the heartbeat to originate in and be conducted through the heart without extrinsic stimulation. They found that each heartbeat originates in the sinoatrial node or pacemaker, in the back wall of the right atrium or upper chamber. An electrical impulse spreads through both atria, and the resulting contraction squeezes blood into the ventricles and out through the body. The heart has its own fail-safe system, but that's the basic science. The spirituality came through master mystics, India's Ramana Maharshi, American-born Adidas Amraj, and others. They discovered the ultimate bodily place where divine unity awakens is in the heart organ. It's in the right side of the chest, not the central heart chakra, not in the brain or the heavens above. From medical anatomy, they identified the site. Guess where? The sinoatrial node, the source of the heartbeat. These lines from another ancient Upanishad aren't mere metaphors. The heart, the perfect seat of meditation, resembles an inverted lotus bud. It always hangs down from the arteries. In the middle of it, there is a great fire. It is the immutable and all-knowing. It heats the body from head to foot. In the middle of it, there is a tongue of fire, dazzling as a streak of lightning in the midst of a dark cloud, and as thin as the yawn at the tip of a grain of rice, golden bright and extremely minute. In the middle of that tongue of flame, the Supreme Self abides firmly. He is God. He, she, you, me, us. To reclaim the heart of our humanity, let us awaken to that lightning-like, shared I Am Self that is our divinity. Rachel Yehuda is a pioneer epigeneticist, the go-to authority on molecular biology of intergenerational trauma. She emphasizes, not all effects of trauma are negative. Represented among children of the Holocaust survivors is a preponderance of people in therapeutic professions. You can get stuck in the legacy of victimization. Or you can say, no. I am going to be part of the solution, which is, of course, a primary virtue of faith. Faith and religious practice, as we all have known for a long time, empower resilience and even change genes. Dr. Yehuda and others are studying now PTG, post-traumatic growth, how to cultivate greater resilience. This is built into religion. We know that. And this is a parliament of the world's religions. What better place to claim this power? Yes, science is extremely important. But divine mystery is not reducible to what hard empirical science or even soft social sciences can prove to our thinking minds. And our hearts and souls already know much. Multi-generational trauma, Old Testament, Ezekiel 2. The fathers have eaten sour grapes, and children's teeth have been set on edge. 10,000 of us are here, bursting with wisdom, ideas, practices, projects, many already underway, others sure to emerge from this astoundingly potent conclave to help our species reclaim the heart of our humanity. Personally, I'm honored to be part of the Healing Hearts at Wounded Knee team. In our workshop tomorrow, we'll invite you to co-create with us unprecedented initiatives for healing, reconciliation, and eventually our species-wide complete outgrowing of the very possibility of wars, massacres, atrocities, and genocides. No more wounded knees. Most of us here are aware of our own character faults and weaknesses. Each of us should keep humbly doing our shadow work, disarming our traumas, strengthening resilience, embodying love, and staying accountable to others who see us deeply. We're all called to this journey, from the greatest king, judge, or teacher, to the meek, poor and afflicted, full of self-doubt. The more we engage it, the more Anne Frank's words will ring true. Despite everything, people really are good at heart. Those few, beyond redemption, will become increasingly rare. As we attend to our healing and developmental growth, cooperating, deepening, honoring tradition and bringing in the new, becoming autonomous and being social, cultural, cooperative human beings, we will behold a miracle. That divine light beyond the heavens is already coming alive and awake in and as each of us and all that is has the one and only heart of all that exists. It is our nature and our destiny forever to embody and to partner with that mystery, that God-goddess, that divinity that includes all of our humanity. We are already both receiving and transmitting a grace that none of us can really deserve, yet each of us can't help but radiate. To close, I'll repeat that ancient gem of Indian scripture we started with. There is a light that shines beyond all things on earth, beyond us all, beyond the heaven, beyond the highest, even the very highest heavens. This is the light that shines in our heart. Thank you.
Thank you, Sanyu. I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Audrey Scott Williams. Audrey is the vision keeper and leader of Trail of Dreams World Peace Walk over six continents from 2005 to 2009 and the 13 Moonwalk for Peace across America. She has the following awards. She's a Presidential Certificate of Merit under President Bill Clinton, HBO Hearing Her Voice, Telling Her Story Award, Volvo for Life American Heroes Award, and the 2008 URI Bose Award to the Trail of Dreams teams. She was the interim global Indigenous coordinator for United Religions Initiative and is currently a trustee on the United Religions Initiative Global Council and co-founder of the Quantum Leap. Please welcome Audrey Scott Williams.
Wonderful energy. I call in my ancestors. I call in all of our divine ones that are still guiding and directing us. I ask my uncle for permission. What I know comes from my life, my walk. My ancestors stood on the shores of Africa, not of their own will, to be enslaved and brought to the Americas and around the world. Over 12 million in all. Nearly 3 million laying at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean and other oceans. My ancestors were walked in 1834 from Georgia and the Carolinas and Alabama and Florida on the trail of the people who cried, or what has become known as the Trail of Tears. 6,000. Nearly a third of whom died along the way, children and women starving in the dead of winter without appropriate clothing. Food that was promised to be delivered never arrived. They literally dropped. In 1993, my life took a big change because my ancestors from Africa, who deposited in my DNA something called Ashe, woke me up and said, "You are now called to walk our path." My native ancestors rose up in me and said, "You have to walk a different path." And when I wouldn't listen, I had a heart attack at 35. I was a dean at a college. I was a mother of three sons, soccer mom, football mom, you name it, and working on my PhD. I hit a brick wall. My ancestors said, "You will listen. And if you don't, we will help you listen." And they did. A long story short, fast forward now to 2000. I resigned, by the way, my job as a dean of continuing education and community services in Southern Maryland. I knew I had to do that because I knew I had to walk a path that I had no idea what that path was. But all my life, I've had these four old ladies that have been bossing me around in spirit. I call them my grandmothers in spirit. And they made a promise to me, and I'm going to bring this all together so we can see where I'm going. They made a promise to me that if you do what we say, you will walk with a protection and a coding that will keep you safe and provide everything you need in your moment of need. I accepted that challenge. In 2000, I was in Wales, where five fires that were lit on five continents by indigenous people were brought together into one flame. It still burns now at The Hague. That night, after walking from the ceremony where the fire was lit, all brought into one flame, I saw this. We were walking in the mountains in Snowdonia, so it's not a lot of light. Walking back to where we were staying was about a 45-minute walk. It was a full moon. And I saw in the moon that I had to come back home and walk the path of my ancestors. And that my first walk would be from Pennsylvania to Georgia, to pray for my ancestors from the Underground Railroad and my ancestors who walked the Trail of Tears. I shared that story and seven walkers joined me, one of them Karen Hunter Watson here. That was in the year 2000. Now, in the same year, one of my elders, I had an opportunity to travel with traditional elders, taking them to meet one another around the world. And one of those elders, who's now an ancestor, gave me a letter. And that letter said, "You're going to walk for your ancestors, and one day you're going to walk the world for peace." I never made the connection because I never considered myself to be a walker. I didn't even know what it meant to be a walker. The first night on the trail, we slept in a bear's den, had no clue till the next morning we saw a sign that said, "Do not sleep here, bear's den." The calling of our ancestors is on us now. We have to learn to listen, because the greatest massacre that is happening right now is the massacre of unconsciousness. We can't afford to be unconscious. We have to wake up.
Ooh.
And that ashe, that energy that our ancestors placed in our blood, is calling us each in our own way to our path. It doesn't matter if we know everything we need to know. We just have to show up to that call.
Ooh.
With courage. Walk your path. Walk what it is we're being called. And pass it on to the children. You see, when we walked from Pennsylvania to Georgia, we brought children out to come walk with us because they need to be connected to the land. They need to feel Mother Earth running through their veins. 2 years later, we went to Africa and we walked the path of the Africans that were marched in Ghana from the forest through the slave dungeons. And we stood at the door of no return and looked out over the Atlantic Ocean. 2 years later, after we had a gathering, my son started a gathering of elders and youth together up in the mountains of Georgia for a week every other year to share wisdom and energy to help heal intergenerationally. At the end of this gathering in 2005, the grandmothers called me aside, and that night I'll never forget. They said, "We have a charge for you. You're going to walk around the world. You can't talk about peace if you don't know peace, if you don't know the heart of Mother Earth, if you don't know the heart of the people." And I cried all night because I knew my life was not going to be the same. My mom was in the fourth stages of Alzheimer's and in a wheelchair, and I knew I had to take my mom with me. 6 months they gave me to prepare, and 6 months we left on this journey. We had no money. We should never have made it. There is no logical reason we made this journey, except Mother Earth embraced us in ways you cannot imagine. Ceremonies of the people of the world imparted in us a strength and a courage to keep going. Communities loved us and cared for us. And my mother, who couldn't talk, opened every door for us on this journey. We went into communities where they no longer have elders, so when my mother shows up with her white hair and her wheelchair, everybody wanted us to leave and go walk and let them take care of mom. Men carry her in their arms from country to country. I learned on days when we arrived in a country with no money and no food, we would sit in circle and we would say, "What would you want if you had the money?" I remember in New Zealand, we had $67 to get to a campsite from the airport. And we looked at each other in this circle and we said, "We don't have any money, we don't have food, we don't have water, what are we going to do? Let's dream what we need." And we would say in a circle what we needed that night, and the next morning it would be there. It got so good that one day Karen said, "I want some sardines." I said, "Well, if you want sardines, then I want two chairs to be outside the tent when I wake up so we can sit in the sun when we're not walking." The next morning, someone had left a box on our table, and in it were four cans of sardines, and beside the box were two chairs. I'm saying this because we look so often to what's out there to give us the answer for what we need in our families and in our communities, what we need with Mother Earth, when what we really need is already inside. They placed it in us. And so our challenge is to remember ourselves back to who we are. Our challenge is to embrace one another, and one way we can do that is through our rituals, our ceremonies, and our spiritual practices that unite us beyond the dialogue and the dogma and bring us into our center, which is our heart.
Uh-huh.
The only way that I've learned on all the journeys is to find that center.
Oh.
And in that center, we're unstoppable. We're unshakable. We cannot be destroyed. And if we focus in raising that together, we can change the things that we are seeing now. We can change the script. We can share our stories. We can share our ancestral knowing. We can remember. Remember here. Remember here. But remember, put back together the human family. I used to ask my ancestors, why wasn't I born just Native American, or why wasn't I born just African? And they said, because you are here to bring the worlds together. Our power is in the journeys that we used to make on this continent and the whole world together as all people when we understood that we were the children of Mother Earth.
Uh-huh.
We were the children of the cosmos. We were the children of the Creator. We were not defined by some outward circumstance. And so my prayer today is embedded in one thing that happened on a journey. One night, in a field of buttercups, under a full moon by a lake, we were camped out in West Virginia, very tired after 8 hours of walking that day, but we had been in the woods for 4 days, and we were coming out. We camped by this river. We had gotten permission from the Y to put our tents there. In the middle of the night, the police came in. They wanted our ID. Everything was okay. I showed them the letter we had. We went back into our tents to go to sleep. And I remember that I had forgotten something. I left my tent to go to the van which carried all of our gear, to get I think my license or something that I'd left there. I hear this car come up behind the van and lights flash. And the policeman calls my name and tells me to step to the back of the van. Now, I've been walking all these months, this about a couple of months into the journey now, so my head is in a very different space. I step to the back of the van, and this young policeman pushes me up against the van and puts me in handcuffs. I didn't know what to do with that experience. I felt so vulnerable. And in that moment, when I wanted to go into rage and lash out at this young policeman who had arrested me, or not arrested me, but put me in handcuffs without checking my ID to make sure I was who he thought I was, I realized when I looked in his eyes that if you say you're going to walk the path of your ancestors, you're going to experience what they experienced.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to walk in their deepest fear. And the deepest fear of my ancestors at that point, where it was right in the middle of the North and South, my Cherokee and my African, I stood in the middle, and what they all feared was that night rider coming in to put them in shackles and carry them away. And in that moment, I was connected to my ancestors, and into the present moment of the children in our streets and in our communities, on reservations and cities and rural areas that are being snatched up and locked up. Our prisons having the most prison population of any country in the world, over 700% higher than anywhere else. We cannot stand for peace and justice. We cannot say we are all about love and be okay with that. We cannot talk about peace. We cannot talk about peace and love and not looking out for what's happening with our brothers and sisters that are in a modern day slavery, where our young people are disappearing because they're brought into a slave trade that brings in over $34 billion a year. We must stand up, and I call the women, the mothers, the grandfathers, all of us have to stand together and say, no more.
Uh-huh.
No more.
Oh.
Drugs and alcohol being given out like candy. Our communities where we don't even have food, called food deserts now. And we wonder why our educational system is collapsing. We must rise up. The massacre of our unconsciousness is greater than any single thing that's ever happened in our history.
Oh.
But we have the choice to shift that.
Oh.
So when the knee becomes a reminder, the trail of tears becomes a reminder, the African slave trade or Holocaust becomes a reminder, all of these events, the wars and the everything that's happening in our world around us, what's happening to Mother Earth, is only to remind us who we are so that we have the courage and the wisdom to stand up. To stand up. But we need ceremony.
Oh.
We need rituals. We need to understand. And I know people assign words, sometimes they hear that, oh my gosh, no. We've got to let that go. What makes us whole is sitting by a fire and sharing our stories. What makes us whole is dancing till the sun comes up. What makes us whole is in taking all of that energy that gets activated out into the world with a strength that is not breakable by any means. And so I know that I may have gone over my time. I pray for forgiveness on that. I want to leave you with a video. When my world turned upside down and I became the mad woman, I complained to one of my elders and he said, my dear, it takes a mad, mad woman to do this work.
Uh-huh.
It's all the mad, mad women and men out there. I want to give you with, and it's very funny, I've never traveled with this video. I showed it once at the United Religions Initiative gathering we just had before this. I never showed this before because it was too sacred to me. You're going to see an elder from Africa, Bangpa Tuset, 110 years old, who came to this country and asked to meet with Native American elders, the wisdom keepers, so that she could ask permission on behalf of all the Africans that were brought here to the Atlantic slave trade. Ask permission for our presence here. Native American elders came from all over this country, all over North America, from Canada, Alaska, U.S., down over to Hawaii, down into South America. It was an amazing event. I just want to give to you with her prayer. At the end of this, you will hear a prayer, and I ask that you just take a pause at the end. It's not translated, but you will understand when you see it. This is the hoop being made strong, coming back together again. The four directions are now reuniting, bringing the stories that each of us hold to make us whole. I thank you for your time.
Oh.
I guess maybe one of the greatest honor to meet your elder last night. She's just beautiful. In our language, we would call her Wakashinane. And that means, you know, English, you can't say it. What it means. But that is like a holy medicine woman. That's the highest level. And they said a long time ago, according to our prophecies, the great mystery got all the people together, and he divided them into four colors, red, yellow, black, and white. And this represents the human race. They say there is only one race, but we are all different colors, because that's the way the Creator made everything. And he said to the people, he said, I'm going to give you each an accountability, and I want you to go off in your own directions. And the day will come when you have to all come together, the time of unity. And to the red direction, he said, you are keepers of the Mother Earth. And to the yellow direction, we were told they were the keepers of the air or wind, the breath. And to the black direction, he said, you are keepers of the sacred water, that you have all the knowledge about the water and that those ways. And to the white direction, he said, you are keepers of the fire. And they said that as we go through the cycle of the time, that each of the directions, they would have something, a knowledge that they were to keep
when the day would come when we'd all come back and form a circle. The first powers was the powers to forgive the unforgivable. Because that's just what we must do. Forgive the unforgivable.
Thank you, Audrey. I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Jean Fleury. Jean is the Tribal Peace Ambassador for the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe in South Dakota and the co-founder of their Kunsi Unsi Society, the Grandmother Society. She has set up the National Tribal Consultation Process for CMS, formerly HCFA, under Bill Clinton. She was the first tribal regional advisor for 20 departments of the federal government under Region 9. And she is a mediation teacher, an RN, and a counseling psychologist. Please welcome Jean Fleury.
Of us here together. And in that vision, I saw us all, each one of you, with a great feather, a great feather, some 8 to 10 feet tall, all of us great feathers.
We're all sitting in ceremony and council together. And then, a few weeks later, once again in meditation, I saw us all together here again. And here we are, all feathered. We're all feathers again. But this time, each barb and barbule of your feather is an ancestor. Ancestors are our ancestors. Thousands upon thousands are here with us today. And as I saw us here all in this beautiful sacred council, ready to take flight together, lo, my vision increased. And I saw that each of our ancestors is a light. And all these lights, our ancestors, are with us here today. We are all these great lights, like a great blazing star here, shining out of Salt Lake, shining out of our planet, shining out into our galaxy. And thus, Spirit unites us together here right now. I have come here, I've been called here, I've been brought here specifically, to invite you in taking action. Action which lies at the very heart of this parliament. Reclaiming the heart of our humanity and moving forward in a sacred way. You are invited to join us in creating a global-wide ceremony on this coming December 29th. At 12 noon, wherever you are on this planet. And enter into prayer and sacred space, all of us together. Together, let us honor not only who have fallen at man at Wounded Knee, but all of the ancestors who have fallen throughout the millennia due to violence and conflict. Let us begin, let us create a global-wide ceremony together wherein we begin the sacred journey together to redress and heal these multi-generational and multi-lineal wounds. How better to honor our great human sacrifice that we've been making than to pledge to end war, to end genocide, to end that. And then to work toward that end. Let us envision for a few moments global life ceremony. We see a great human prayer encircling our entire globe, our entire planet, our beloved planetary home, throughout the whole day. Global ceremony. We are moving forward with this, inviting the sacred to guide us, walk with us, inspire us as we embrace to heal these deepest of our wounds. That's the most far reaching and heretofore, in many ways, unconscious wounds. There are already vast networks of people all around the world who are already working in inspired ways to bring justice, justice, and healing. Global ceremony. We invite a great turning to mend and reclaim the true depth, breadth, power, and wisdom of our spiritual heart.
Ooh.
We invite tears. Tears of remorse. Tears of compassion. Tears of anointment, tears of healing, cleansing the depth of our pain. Lacrimae Deum, tears of God. We would be reclaiming the utter tenderness, the infinite depth, the unutterable sweetness, and the delicacy of our spiritual heart. And the outer mysteries that have led to our spiritual, what Martin Luther King said, our spiritual it's like we're in prison, like to release our true spiritual power that we have. We're not there yet. This is our work yet, my friend. Let me talk about this in a different way. Even as we prepare to do ceremony together for this great commitment, we begin to be stirred to our very depths. We begin to be inspired in a different way. Inspiration is being ignited and invited in ways we don't even know. And when we do ceremony together, ignition to birth and grow those seeds that have already been planted. We hold here a great potential, a tsunami of potential. And I submit that humanity sits on a new frontier. We've always sat on a frontier. But this is the difference now is that we can be more conscious and therefore more directive and more effective in our will and our resolve to action. I, this panel, this parliament, we can galvanize a whole new frontier for peace. We hold in our hands, our hearts, our lives, and our roles a great opportunity as we meet here together. As we embrace massacre, war, and our most heinous acts with intention, attention, and love, they begin to transform, to heal, and to give us the wisdom and great compassion. We begin to understand their genesis, and then be able to move beyond those domains. The antecedents of war are hatred, racism, and retribution, to name a few. The sequela of massacre are the same. I have ancestors who have died at Wounded Knee in 1890. As you look deeply at your family tree, at your lineage, you find altogether all too many ancestors who have suffered and died in war. The untold millennial and ancestral suffering and wounding this has brought to humanity has not really been fully acknowledged until now. It is time to heal. As James O'Day has said, we can end this transmission of wounding. As we join in ceremony, we open a door. Let us walk through this doorway together. Let us take this action that arises from our mutual joining and heartfelt intention to end war. It is through this doorway of healing that the great human spirit can truly learn war no more. Only thus can we truly bask in our birthright of freedom, joy, beauty, and peace.
Mm-hmm.
What does this mean? It means humanity embracing and feeding, bringing home and our starving children all over across the planet. We can do this. It means feeding or starving millions. We can do this. It means welcoming home the homeless. We can do this. It means honoring, nurturing, and learning from our forgotten elders. We can do this. It means laying down our arms and embracing each other with our true arms. We can do this. It means emptying our prisons with forgiveness and reconciliation as we learn from our humanness together. We can do this. It means ending the multi-generational wounds of Holocaust. We can do this. It means the healing of humanity's collective schism with the earth. we can do all of this and more. Healing hearts at Indigene. This is a poem, a prayer. Our prayer. Our prayer. Out of the boundless love we hold for creation, out of the deepest grace from which the universe unfolds, out of the sourcing of all wisdom, out of embracements and embracing ceaseless compassion, out of the tender yet raging fire of courage, from the depth of our heart of hearts, let us cherish ourselves, cherish one another, cherish all children, cherish men, women, elders, cherish all of every belief persuasion. Cherish all of humanity, inclusively, in such great need. Let us cherish the two-legged, the four-legged, the winged ones, all creatures, great and small. Let us cherish and treasure our earthly planetary home, for we have not yet learned to do this. To honor all who have ever died in war and massacre, to honor all who have ever died in Holocaust, to honor all who have been tortured and died and been tortured and lived. To honor the great wounding of humanity, we gather to finally heal. Let us pledge to end massacre. Let us pledge to end genocide. Let us pledge to end racism. Let us pledge to end war. Let us pour forth the power of forgiveness. We have this power. Let us nest in brotherly, sisterly love. Let us learn the depth, breadth, and eternal nature of our true power. Let us learn what it is to more deeply love. Let us sit in healing ministrations. Let us hold heartfelt deliberations, reconciliation councils. Let us host workshops, talking circles, gazing sessions. Let us sing, dance, make music, art, singly and together. Let us listen to our stories, dreams, visions, invite inspiration to walk hand in hand. Let communities gather and ignite new life ways. Let us pray, meditate, deepen into soul. Let restorative justice reign with wisdom and love. We are much more than we have ever known. Leaders, dawning leaders, gather, bring your own. Mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, hermits, orphans, grandparents, we call to one and all. Come with us in person or come with us in spirit. Come with us to wounded knee. Let our passion and compassion bring us here on bended knee. Heal our hearts at wounded knee. We'll call on great mystery, great spirit. Divine grace, which creates the galaxies, the stars, our earth, and gives us the mystery of life. Be with us, anoint us, guide us, heal us.
Jean came with this vision of activating global connection and healing and ceremony around the 125th anniversary to me via my friend Samuel. I knew in my heart that this was essential and important for humankind. So I will just, in these last few minutes, share a little bit about why I see this work as so central for all of us, not just indigenous people, but all of humanity. And that is because I believe we cannot move to our next level of health and peace and prosperity on a planetary level until we clear these deep wounds that are festering and creating so much of the conflict and drama and polarization of our day. They are literally in the field of humanity, they are in the heart of humanity, they are in the DNA of humanity. The wound with the indigenous people is one of the most profound. We just came off of Columbus Day on Monday. The horrors that were perpetrated by Columbus and his fellow invaders of this country are staggering. Millions and millions butchered and massacred. Reading about it is one of the most horrific things you can do, and yet one of the most necessary. So I believe that literally America, Canada, that we have founded our country on this unmetabolized genocide that needs to be faced and cleared and healed and reconciled for us to step into our maturity as a people, as a country, and as a world. It feeds into when we are in denial of this history, we are more likely to continue to use war as a way to solve disputes. We also isolate ourselves. We separate ourselves from the deep wisdom lineages that the indigenous people have been carrying, the knowledge of how to do counsel, how to do worship together, how to make decisions in a collective manner, how to connect with the earth, how to honor plants and animals. All of these are essential ingredients of us finding a new kind of wholeness. And until we fully embrace and honor this stream, which we did not do as the invading people from Europe and elsewhere, we did not do that. So there's a rupture in the psyche, and that needs to be healed. And it can be healed in many different ways, but we do have an opportunity with Wounded Knee now to come together in an unprecedented level of collaboration and focus, to use this opportunity, this memorial event, to come together and heal these deeper roots of trauma so it is not feeding into our current mindset and our current psyche. And so when we link together across the world, I believe that we are literally releasing some of this collective trauma from the psyche, from the people, whether we're indigenous or not. We are participating in this release through our hearts and through our bodies and through our joining together. And so I believe that we are contributing to literally delaying or perhaps preventing future wars. And I believe that this resolution of traumas from the past is absolutely essential for us to create a peaceful planet. So I really urge all of us to take seriously the addressing the roots of the wounding that is feeding so much distress and disharmony and war on the planet. This is a beautiful opportunity. The level of commitment that is required to go through 50 degree below zero weather on horseback for so many days is that in itself is a signal. It's a stand for the universe to say, we are committed to end this. So we can do our part. I am going to go I can only make the last day because of other commitments, but I will be there for the ceremony myself. I encourage all of you to say, I am going to mark that moment in my calendar now. I mean, raise your hand if you are willing to mark this in your calendar and put it on your calendar. And at the very least, you sit in prayer and meditation, ask for blessing and ask for healing, not just for yourself, but for all humanity and for the indigenous peoples who have received so much injustice and so much suffering as a result of these misunderstandings and really dark, dark decisions of the past. So it is time now for us to come together. The Hopis have a prophecy that it is a time of restoring of the sacred hoop and the tribe, the black tribes and the yellow tribes and the white tribes and the red tribes are to come together and restore our sacred family. But it requires us to be willing to look into the heart of the darkness and to feel it, to let it move through us and to transform. So if all of you who raise your hand commit to sitting at this time in sacred circle, doing ceremony, doing whatever it comes to you to bless and heal and release this, and you invite all of your friends, even in your living room, or even better, go to a place of disharmony and healing in your community, a place where there have been murders. You might go to the local prison. You might a place where there is still this festering wound of humanity manifesting in some way. And if you join with just even a few of your friends in sacred prayer and harmony, we are doing our part to help alleviate this karma and this terrible tragedy and to ensure that it does not happen again. So, final thing, I want to also encourage you, there is an Indiegogo campaign, and if you search for Wounded Knee at Indiegogo, you will find it. There, it is very imperative because there's not adequate resources to support the writers. So we have stepped forward. We helped to sponsor the film. There's a beautiful video that goes associated with it. We have contributed, and we're inviting everybody to help get it out to other networks and Facebook friends and family. And the money will be very well used to provide the resources and support for the writers and for the events to link around the world. So if you can help on that level as well, it is absolutely important for us to do this work. So let us really join together and be the solution, be the healing by joining hands and restoring the sacred soup. And what?
Workshop tomorrow.
And we're going to close with a prayer from Marvel.
Getting the hearts of humanity. We think about all, not only Wounded Knee, but the Holocaust, all the people. I'm sure that each and every one of you have experienced history of trauma. In our way of life, our mothers, that Mother Earth is a source of life, not a resource. That we, the people, know, we say prayer for all the people that have gone before us. And today, as we stand here, we're going to make history. Because as we look to the future, our life is so sacred, the water of life, that Mother Earth is a spirit,
ooh,
and the sun is a life giver. So today, that we pray for all the people that have done wrong to us. And we pray for peace, global healing. Tomorrow is a better day than the days to come. Pungashla Wakantaka. Mapetukile Wachipukagapi. Tiwaya Chuchoni Uchosani. Dacha Ampetukile. Tiwaya Natu. Pugateke Chante Wash Aga Kimani Pikte. Chante Wash Aki. Chante down watching Kukalapi, Tokashla, walking around the key. May peace be with each and every one of you. Thank you very much.
Come to our workshop tomorrow. We want to hear from you.
So our workshop tomorrow is at 8:15. It's in this room, and we look forward to seeing you all come back. And if you give me just a minute, I'll pull up that beautiful video that Stephen was talking about.